This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. It's been a great day already. I was lucky enough to be invited to Mr. Fred Goodwin's birthday party today over at the Sub, and got to see a lot of my old friends and just a good bunch. And by the way, happy birthday, Fred. And we're talking about Fred Goodwin, 65 years old today. What do you think about that, Greg? It's hard to believe. You think back and, boy, 65 years really covers a lot of territory.
My sympathy, Fred. But you're at least now eligible for Medicare.
Yeah.
Why someone wants to pay our bills for us, I'm not sure, but don't turn it down.
That's right. Yeah. You talk about it. I gave him a nice little card, cheery card. But you think about it and all those things, how we all used to look forward to the golden years, as they used to call it. And is that because we get so many freebies when we get that age?
That must be it, because I hadn't figured out any other real advantage to it. And I'm jealous. I thought Fred was 4 or 5 years older than me. He's a year younger than me. I'll be darned.
Well, I tell you what. You think he looks that old? Really?
Well,
I thought the Jones blood kept you looking young.
Yeah, yeah. No comment, Truman.
I drove by your house yesterday, matter of fact. And
Donald's Chapel.
I absolutely love that area out there, and I always have. And there have been a lot of improvements out in that area. But I was really hoping I'd see you rocking on the front porch, but I couldn't find you anywhere.
Well, I got a swing and two rockers there. You just didn't come by at the right moment. Did my new automatic gate open for you?
Is that what it was?
Well, I've got this.
Let me tell you, you got a little bit of a dent on there this afternoon when you go by and take a look.
Oh, my. Well, I've one of these fancy automatic gates. My wife's got a button she carries with her, and she can push that, and it'll open the gate. Mm-hmm. I have to roll down the window and reach out and push a couple of buttons, code in, open the gate. And then when you drive up from the other side, the gate opens, magic opens, you know, because it knows you're coming. But every once in a while, it just opens up. And I've looked out the window just in time to see it just opening up. And either my gate's haunted, or the thing's got a mind of its own, or it's reacting to certain bird calls. I'm not sure. But we'll get it adjusted. Everything's got a computer in it these days. And I have to bring back somebody that knows that computer, work on it a little bit.
You know, it must be nice to live in a gated community where you're the only one in the community.
That's right, a community of two of us.
How do you reach that status in life? Where you
actually, I got jealous because my son, who lives over on the other side.
He's on
Cripple Creek. He had a gate like that. Mm-hmm. It came with the house when he got it, but he's got one of those gates. And I thought, if my 26-year-old son can have an automatic gate, I ought to have one, too. So my wife and I gave each other the gate for Christmas. It took us a couple of months to get the thing installed, but...
But it worked.
Yeah, that's the
most of the time.
That's the newest thing, and it works more often than it's supposed to. That's what's new in Donald's Chapel.
And I do want to say hi to my grandson, True, who has been going. There's an awful lot of upper respiratory problems going on in Rutherford County right now, and unfortunately he's one of the ones that's come victim down. He's down with it. So hello, True, and I hope you're feeling better. We need you back. I mean, he's our shortstop on the Rattlers, so we got to get him back and healthy. Now, a couple of hundred years ago, some interesting things were going on in the Murfreesboro in Rutherford County area. I think they were about to make some big decisions.
Yeah, we finally were getting around to the point where a decision had been made, and they were actually going to put a stick in the ground and said, this is Murfreesboro. This is where Murfreesboro, that's O-U-G-H on the end, is going to be.
Which is still O-U-G-H. I love that.
Yeah. After the four voted to put Murfreesboro close to Murfreesboro Spring, they picked one of their number who happened to be a surveyor. You wonder about conflict of interest back in those days.
There wasn't any.
No. He happened to be a surveyor. So the four of them, because three quit at that point, because it was a bitter, bitter decision. Mm. And three of them, including Charles Reedy, one of the most influential fellows in the county at the time, just walked. And that left four out of the seven to... And from that point on, they had to be unanimous because, you know, they had to have a majority decision. But they selected one of their number, Hugh Robinson, who was a surveyor, to lay out Murfreesboro. And interesting, you know, you and I have talked before about when would you really call, at what point was Murfreesboro born? 100 years ago, in 1912, the DAR asked the state archivist to help them define the date that would properly be called when Murfreesboro was born. And June 1812 is what he gave them at the time. Now, that was an opinion. Mm-hmm. Others may differ, but it was his opinion that when they put the stake in the ground and said, this is Murfreesboro, and laid out the lots and said where the courthouse was, that that was the time at which you could say Murfreesboro came into being. June 1912 is when the 100th anniversary of Murfreesboro was observed. In some interesting things, of course, some of my readers are aware, Mr. Robinson erred. And whether he had a bad map to work from or bad directions, we'll never know. But when he laid it out, about a third of it got off of the Lytle property and was on the property that became the Hilliard son-in-law and his wife, son-in-law of Colonel Murfree. Mm-hmm. So 6 years later, they had to do some straightening out, get things sorted out. But for those who believe that once you can say, I'm standing in Murfreesboro, is the day on which you ought to recognize the birthday, that would be this month.
Now, tell me exactly, or is it listed anywhere, where the stake was driven?
All right.
Where Murfreesboro actually began, or supposedly began?
A surveyor then, perhaps today as well, although you got a lot more things you can use, he had to have something that would be a reliable base point, something mm-hmm. that could be referred to looking forward. And, of course, this was long before the technology we know now. So he chose the mouth of what we now call Town Creek or the Murfree Branch Stream, mm-hmm. where it flowed into what we now know of as Lytle Creek. Mm-hmm. And although it's been channelized and straightened out and put in a pipe, it's still roughly the spot right there beside our little pioneer village where the creek that runs down the side of the village flows into Lytle Creek. That was the base point.
Right next to Broad Street.
Yeah,
pretty close.
Close to what's now Broad Street. Mm-hmm. It'd be back behind the Mexican restaurant, roughly. I guess right in there.
Wouldn't be too far from where the old jail was.
No, it was right down the road.
Yeah, because it went right underneath there.
Yeah, that was as it came on across.
Uh-huh.
Now, that point was not included in the plat, but that point was the marker point from which he measured to the first lot number. I forget which lot number that was, but the closest lot was probably 20 or 30 feet out from that point. But he used that point as his beginning point, so everything could be measured from that point.
Now, when they were talking about their office buildings, like the courthouse and things like that, was that taken into consideration once they started, say, this is where Murfreesboro starts? Did they take in consideration how they were going to grow from that point?
I don't know about the growth, but you can just look at the layout, and I have not found this in the documentation, but I suspect the intent was to put the courthouse on the high point. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it now, the courthouse is on what now we might call a rise.
Right.
But it was a hill at the time. And I imagine with that in mind is how he began to lay things out and surrounded the courthouse with various lots. Courthouse was originally said to be 2 acres. The space around it has been chopped down now because of, you know, widening for parking and all that. But originally it was 2 acres in the middle with 70 lots platted around it. And I'm not sure how long it took him to do the work, but next month, we'll talk about it, I guess, next month, is when the deed was actually written. So it meant that within 30 days, he had put together the legal description of what was going to be transferred to the town commissioners. And, of course, the town commissioners actually held title, legally held title at that point. And their charge was, once it reached that point, was to then sell and use the funds from selling the lots around the courthouse site to build the courthouse.
To be businesses, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was laid out as businesses. And we can talk next month about the deed, because the deed itself is a very significant historical document for our local history, but also has some very curious aspects to it.
You know, when you think about the square and all that, and how the space was allotted for the buildings, you know, they were pretty much on target. They must have had some vision of how they wanted the business to look on the square, and in conjunction with the courthouse, and you having a background with your dad being an architect, and of course, as good a background in history as anybody I know. For what reason were the courthouses, if you go to any place in Tennessee in the county, the courthouse is always sitting on the highest point.
Right, right.
And what is that supposed to depict? Or is it just because
it's a pattern
or whatever?
Yeah, it was a pattern used all over the eastern part of the United States as they laid out the towns, town squares. And I'm sure it has a European origin. And the high point, I suspect that was very deliberate. I'm speculating, but I know how, you know, if you go into court, the bench that the judge sits on is always a little bit higher than everybody else in the courtroom.
Right.
And I think the idea was, this is going to be the seat of our government. Mm-hmm. We want people to literally look up to our government. So, you know, usually the buildings have a vertical character to them, if not a tower or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you're looking up at the seat of government, the courthouse. And I think that was very much a part of the way it was laid out here, just looking at it today. Now, remember, the lots we talked about are not the little side-by-side storefronts we have now. For instance, if you'll take where the Planning Commission, the Election Commission, the county office there on the corner now, half of that whole block, extending from what you learned a couple of months so ago, South Main,
right,
all the way back to Vine Street, from what's Church Street now, all the way to the middle, which would be about where the Tip Top Barbershop is. Mm-hmm. All that was one lot. So you can see over time those lots have been divided and subdivided, you know, down. But someone getting that one lot facing right at the courthouse was actually getting about an eighth of the whole square. They were getting a half of one side the way it was laid out.
Now, on the square at that time, 200 years ago, what type of businesses would be prevalent at that time? And I'm sure that it had to be something that was related to that particular age.
Well, 200 years ago, there was nothing. But after, you know, they started building and developing, I remember what goes on in the courthouse. Mm-hmm. So the people it's going to attract to the courthouse. So your original businesses were catering to that flow of clientele. All right. Which means saloons.
Wow.
Were some of the early. There were stores. A few. The name, most people pronounce it Jeton, J-E-T-T-O-N,
Jeton.
Looks like Jeton.
I went to school with someone, Jeton.
Yeah, those were storekeepers up in Jefferson, and they were smart. Just as soon as they saw the way things were going, rather than bucking the politics, as a lot did, they came on down here and bought some of the first places around the square. About half of those original purchasers are listed in the deed records, easy to find. A good portion of them seem to have been lost or disappeared over the years. But you'll see some familiar names like Barfield and Jetton. Jetton. I even know a few of those now.
I bet they don't want to be called Jetton.
So you had, you know, the businesses catering that, but there were stores, there were financial, a bank, some of the early banks located there. If you remember those early banks, the banker was actually working out of his own pocket until he got started good and got in some money. So the banks were very small. I would say that about half the lots sold in that first range of sales. And the others took time as things developed because, you know, there was the ring of property right around the courthouse, and then there was another outer ring or two. The expansion beyond that was to the north, and it was laid out so they easily could lay out, you know, additional streets to the north, everything in grid pattern at that time. In fact, if you find any street that seems to run at an angle of that grid pattern, you know that came 100 years later, that they stayed with that grid pattern for at least the first century.
I think it's interesting to note that what our ancestors were looking at for a city, because I would have in mind that they would build churches, they would build apparel places, places for food and those type of things like that. It kind of shocks me that some of the first buildings were actually saloons.
They were
that,
saloons.
That were banned for many years after that. I mean, it seems
eventually,
like...
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, eventually.
Well, the churches came in. I think we talked a couple of times back about the first church on the square was what we now call Primitive Baptist, which is probably how Church Street got its name, because it was on that stretch. But the churches were kind of one block off, the early churches that came in. Dry goods store, there probably was certainly a second generation a dry goods store. And as it evolved over time, particularly, well, after Prohibition, you know, everything went the other direction. And even when Prohibition was lifted, very little came back in the way of just saloons and that kind of thing.
When the families would come to downtown during that period of time, what would they mostly be looking at? Was it a time to socialize, or was that basically...
Yeah, 200 years ago, no. 200 years ago, you came to the county seat because you needed to do business at the county seat. Now, we're talking about the farms and all outlying.
Right.
And it might be once a month or once several months. And not likely that they brought the kids and the wife along. There just wasn't any real reason to. The outlying communities were self-sufficient, and you didn't want to waste time. You know, your kids should be home working the farm. But a death, which occasioned an estate back then, every transfer of property was reviewed by the county court, the predecessor of our county commission. Every estate was reviewed and approved, transfers reviewed and approved. So a lot of business is now routinely done by our local bureaucracy, required action by the quarterly court. Quarterly court, of course, implies exactly what it sounds like. They met four times a year, and those were the busy times on the square.
And that was quarterly court for a long time.
Right, right.
It's only been, what, the last 20 years or so that they've actually started meeting on a monthly basis.
Yeah, yeah. And you're talking about the surveying Murfreesboro. It's interesting, too, the way the shape of the county was evolving during that same period. In 1803, when it was first petitioned to set up the county, this was all Davidson County. In fact, if you go back to the earliest deed records, you need to go to Davidson County Courthouse or the Davidson County Register of Deeds, even today, because those were filed in Davidson County. It's for some of these earliest transactions before 1803. Reedy, Rucker, and others petitioned, the legislature to set up Rutherford County. It happened in 1803. But the definition of the boundaries was rather crude. On the north side, they divided Rutherford and Davidson County by Hurricane Creek, sometimes pronounced Hurricane Creek. And I've often wondered why there are so many Hurricane Creeks around Tennessee, because I'm not aware that there ever was a hurricane that came through here. And I got curious and looked up the word hurricane. And in old usage, that meant demon. And then in other usage, it meant something that was very much, as the sound is, in a hurried way. So I wonder if those were fast-flowing creeks that flushed out and disappeared, or just what was going on. But and Hurricane Creek is still up there. We all know Hurricane Boat Dock, such as that. But then not too long after that, Davidson County, or the state, under the pressure from Davidson County, cleaned up that. And we lost a little bit, we Rutherford County, when they made the permanent line. But the other direction was interesting because they said it would extend from that point to the Indian lands. Well, back in the 1800s, nobody really knew where those old treaty lines were, or if they knew, others disagreed. So our southern boundary for a while was simply unknown and was over the hill somewhere. But in 1808, the legislature chopped off the southern part of Rutherford County and created Bedford County. So then it was clear because they used the watershed point. Everything in Rutherford County, all the creeks and whatever in what became Rutherford County, flowed towards the Stones River. Everything on the other side flowed towards the Duck River, and that was turned into Bedford County. Wow. So they essentially used what we call the watershed of the Stones River. Which, of course, extended us quite a bit east into what is now Cannon County. Do we need to take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back with Greg Tucker.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Business phone systems don't have to be expensive or hard to install and maintain. CudaTel is an easy-to-use, next-generation VoIP phone system that enables seamless, high-definition voice and video communication. It's time to fire the phone guy. Because CudaTel can be deployed by your in-house or outsourced IT staff. Starting at just $1,399 with no per-user or per-feature fees, CudaTel by Barracuda Networks is powerful and affordable. Visit CudaTel.com for a free evaluation. That's CudaTel.com.
Mark Twain once said that the secret of success was making your vocation your vacation. And I can't think of anything I'd rather do than save folks money on their car insurance with GEICO. I'm proud to have helped millions of drivers save and save big. Hundreds of dollars a year. Come to think of it, my bosses say I should take a vacation. I'll probably go to the beach, get a little sun, see if anyone needs to save money on their car insurance. There I go again.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by AmeriCare Pest Control, the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, and the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna.
I've got pesties buzzing, rodents running all through my house, ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I'm overrun with pests, but you're gonna be sure, safe and secure, it's the last rites for those pests. Best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
Let's check those Good Neighbor events. Photographs by my buddy Dan Whittle are on display now through June 30th at the Art Center of Cannon County. Don't forget the 20th anniversary luau at the Stones River Country Club for the Primary Care and Hope Center. That's Saturday, June the 16th. Get in touch with Betty McFarland at 893-3930. Again, the 20th anniversary luau is June the 16th. And right now through June the 20th, you're encouraged to stuff the bus as United Way collects school supplies that will be placed in literacy kits and given to needy pre-kindergarten through the third grade students at local schools. Check with United Way for more information. And it's time to adopt one of the 10,000 yellow rubber ducks that'll float down the Stones River at 4:23 on Saturday, June the 23rd. And the first duck through the flume gets its owner $5,000. The Rubber Duck Derby benefits the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. Don't forget the Rubber Duck Derby on Saturday, June the 23rd. That's right there on the Medical Center Parkway at the Sportsman's Club. Adopt your rubber duck today. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
If you know someone who has gone the extra mile, nominate them to be Good Neighbor of the Day. Just send those nominations to news@wgnsradio.com or stop in our studios at 306 South Church Street. What makes Murfreesboro Automotive different from all the others?
We try to go through every avenue to save people money.
Chuck Haynes at Murfreesboro Automotive.
They just might need some windshield wipers put on. We'll do that. If the vehicle needs another engine, we try to save money by going to some of these pre-owned lots and buy an engine or a transmission and install it.
Discover the difference at Murfreesboro Automotive. Just turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's. They're on Ridgely Road.
Hi, I'm Dr. Britt Miaton, a cardiologist with St. Thomas Heart at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. Did you know that St. Thomas Heart is Middle Tennessee's number one rated heart program? At MTMC, we offer comprehensive services for the treatment and prevention of heart disease. From early diagnosis to minimally invasive surgical procedures, St. Thomas Heart at MTMC offers you heart care close to home. For information, visit heartasone.com or call 867-5028.
Weather-eye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon, high in the low 80s. Tonight, mainly clear, low near 58. Sunny on Wednesday, high near 81. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 79 degrees.
Stay ahead of severe weather. Get breaking news and local sports scores first. This is Jenny Williams at Gill's Ace Hardware in Smyrna. We sponsor text alerts from WGNSradio.com. Look for the sign-up link on the homepage. It's a free service.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back to the Greg Tucker Show. And we want to let you know this part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, Melissa Warren's business. And she found out that a number of our citizens were having trouble keeping up with their responsibilities in their home. And there was a good chance that they may have to move out. Well, you don't have to anymore. What they do at Home Care is they come into your home 24/7, make sure they take care of all of those responsibilities, even run errands for you, and you can sit back and enjoy life like it was meant to be. And if that sounds good to you, give them a call, 713-4639, or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. Or you can go by their place of business. It's 237 Castlewood Drive. That's Suite H, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you know, one thing while we're off the air that I asked you a question on, because I know that it's vital whenever you establish a place of government, you have to have avenues to get there. And I was wondering, you have all the waterways and things like that, but you're pretty much still in a wilderness to some amount.
Oh, yeah. The McMinnville was developing about the same time, or a little ahead probably, of Jefferson, our first county seat. And the only what I would call road as we might recognize it today, which I'm sure was two ruts, just dirt, but at least it was obviously coming from here and going there, was from Nashville through Jefferson, through Readville, and on over to McMinnville, connecting those. There were no roads going north and south, really. The waterway was an important way to get your produce to market. You could come down the East or West Fork to Jefferson, which was really well placed at that time because it had the road through it and it was on the forks of the river. And of course, navigation as we think of it today didn't exist. They were poling flatbeds and it's often things not much bigger than a large rowboat, but they were able to move up and down the river. Now, we were talking about how in 1808 they chopped off the southern half of, well, more than a half. They everything over the ridge is called Tennessee Divide, the ridge there, was taken out of our county. And then is when the controversy arose about the placement of the county seat, because it was evident just looking at it that the county seat was a good ways up near the north boundary. And there were an awful lot of big landowners with a lot of political influence, including Charles Reedy down in Reedville, who wanted to bring it closer for their business and, you know, for their advantage. And that was what started the whole commotion about relocating it. Interesting, though, that the other site that was almost chosen over near what is now the VA site, the Veterans Administration Hospital site, probably was more nearly the center of the county because the county extended quite a bit further to the east. There's a very crude map that was drawn in 1819, and it shows the Rutherford County boundary just barely west of what's now Woodbury. In fact, there's what's called the Edgefield community there, and that would have been right on the edge of Rutherford County. And so there was quite a bit more to the east. Now, the shape that was decided in 1808 continued pretty much unchanged, although in those days nobody was dead sure where, you know, boundaries were, unless it became contested and they had to settle it. But it was in the 1830s that the folks over in the Woodbury area petitioned to set up another county. And I think it was about that time that the legislature, recognizing that this could go on indefinitely, came up with kind of an odd rule. They did set up Cannon County, but soon thereafter the rule was made, state law, that you could not move, because see, when they did that, that shrunk Rutherford County, shrunk Wilson County, shrunk Warren County, as they made room, you know, for a new county in there. They passed a law that said you could not move a county boundary towards the county seat more than a distance of 9 miles. So if you'll measure some counties, you'll see that they're almost, the average would probably be about 18 miles across if you draw a straight line through the county seat. So after about the 1830s, very little exception was made. You had to be very influential, like somebody down in what's now Moore County, Jack Daniels, were able to get special legislation. But
well, now the change of boundaries or establishing other counties off of a larger county, was that done for the convenience of the people that were living in those areas because they were so far away from the governmental?
The people in the, what's now Cannon County petitioned the legislature and said McMinnville, which some of them were in, and Murfreesboro, or Rutherford County, which some of them were in, are too much for us to travel or be expected to travel, unreasonable. We need to create a new county. And when they did, they drew a line. Now, it's interesting. If you look at that line, you'd think, well, in 1830, they're drawing a line. They could have drawn a straight line. But if you look at it, that line over on our eastern boundary wiggles all over the place because they were trying to, in most cases, accommodate the landowners. So the Gideon Rucker place, which is just south of Rucker's Knob, actually has the south side of Rucker's Knob, you can see a straight line up and then a straight line north and south and a straight line to the east. And it was accommodating the private boundaries and not splitting as much as they could, not split with one, well, several, but one very obvious exception. They went right through the middle of Colonel Reedy's property.
Oh, my.
And split his property between Rutherford County and the new Cannon County. And I wonder to this day, was that vindictive? Because remember, he was the one who said, I'm out of here. I'm not going to have anything more to do with this Murfreesboro. He was the poor loser. And he refused, literally, to even come to Murfreesboro. Fortunately, his son, who later was a mayor of Murfreesboro, his son moved to Murfreesboro, Charles Reedy Jr. I wonder when they drew that line separating off Cannon County if there wasn't a little bit of spite there, because they split his, which means they cut almost literally in half his influence.
Are you talking about where the river is now?
Well, if you look at the line, it touches the river, but it doesn't quite exactly follow the river. And he owned both sides. Remember, his mill was on what's now the Cannon County side. His home, which was built in that, about that same time, was on the Rutherford County side. So they split his property. What did we give up, Rutherford County, when that was taken? Well, there was a good bit of private property there. But if you look at a map even today, we gave up some beautiful wooded hills that were rather poor when it came to farming. About 50 years later, they discovered zinc over in that area. And for a while, it was a zinc mining area. And I'm judging by activity today, there must be some awfully good limestone under those hills, because if you go out from about the point where the line was drawn back, there's three quarries right along the Bragg Highway. So apparently, there's a lot of good rock there. But at the time, I'm sure Rutherford Countyans felt like we weren't giving up much.
But you look at it, that was a pretty much a thriving community over in Readville at that time.
Readville.
They had the electricity. They had everything going for them over there.
Well, part of what Reedy was worried about didn't come to pass. He thought they put, they moved the county seat over in that area, and all the traffic will be diverted off me. But rather quickly after the establishment of Murfreesboro, a Murfreesboro to McMinnville route and a Nashville to Murfreesboro route was developed. Still,
you're talking about 70, Highway 70?
Well, what's roughly 70?
Yeah,
41, 70, But a route from Nashville to Murfreesboro connecting the county seats, and then from Murfreesboro to Woodbury, but actually going to McMinnville, went right through. So Reedy didn't lose much. He still had, because his business, he was less of a landowner in terms of farming and such. He was running businesses that accommodated the travelers, inns, drinking houses, and things of that sort.
I'm surprised he didn't become more of a factor over in Cannon County than what he did.
Well, as I say, his house was all, he couldn't vote in Cannon County, but then his business was over. He wasn't part of Rutherford County.
Yeah.
And they split him out. And he didn't live a whole lot longer than that. That was that was a good 20 years after the decision, about 25 years after the decision about the county seat. One other adjustment was interesting, because it was about mid to late 1840s. Eagleville, which was a thriving little community on a north-south route from Nashville, heading south down to the county seat, Bedford County, had developed into a prosperous little community there. But their county seat was Franklin, and there was no road to Franklin. And except the road to Nashville, they didn't have any easy route, particularly when they needed business with their county seat of government. They tried, the leaders in Eagleville, to get somebody to build them a road. Now, remember, somebody, in this period, the counties weren't building roads. The state was giving contracts to private entrepreneurs to build toll roads. The state would specify how it was to be built. And in some cases, the state would loan or advance monies or put some portion, but they really were private.
Now you're toll roads.
Yeah, toll roads.
So you actually had to pay to utilize those roads.
That's right. And somebody.
And here we are in the horse and buggy and horse days.
Absolutely. And somebody owned that roadway, some person. Well, there was a brothers, I believe, Ransom down in the Versailles area. We can argue about how that's pronounced, too.
Okay.
The Ransom brothers said, we will build a road. And they got the legislature to give them the authority. And when they got the authority, that meant they could come take your property if they needed it for their roadway. They had to pay you, of course, but they essentially had
without
the right.
Without ending up in court or anything like that.
Well, if you didn't agree, there was a procedure but the landowner didn't have much to argue about. They had the right to condemn, just as a local governments do now. Mm-hmm. The state gave that to whoever they gave the contract to build a toll road.
Hmm.
Well, someone had already built a toll road from and some Murfreesboro entrepreneurs from mm-hmm. Murfreesboro to Salem. The Ransom brothers said, we'll build a road from Eagleville to Salem. Mm-hmm. It was the Eagleville to Salem toll road. And that, of course, meant that all the business out of Eagleville turned east. And we'd come east to the markets, you know, over to Murfreesboro and such as that. So then Eagleville, in that section, petitioned the legislature to be taken out of Williamson County mm-hmm. and added to Rutherford County. And that was the last significant addition to the county. And that pretty much defined. But today, if you'll look at the lay of the hills, your watershed,
mm-hmm.
Eagleville, and down in that area flows to the Harpeth River.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the watershed for Williamson County. The Harpeth River rises right down in that area, flows to that. You come over the hill coming up towards Salem, and you get into the Stones River watershed where everything flows this way.
Now, so. Eagleville is an interesting story in itself. It's one of those areas, in my mind, should have grown a long time ago mm-hmm. and probably would have if everything, and I still believe it's going to explode one of these days, especially when they get the new system in, hopefully that they're still working on. But the funny thing about it is you mentioned Riedel and you mentioned Jefferson, old Jefferson, which were back then, you said the waterways were the way that you were right. able to transport
right.
the larger amounts of goods.
Right.
But yet you're moving away from that conduit, I guess, into an area where you don't have that.
Now, Eagleville did not really have
even
river
Murfreesboro
access,
really is a little is not
yeah.
adjacent to that.
Well, Murfreesboro, you still had the West Fork, and of course. As soon as they began building the road, Nashville to Murfreesboro, mm-hmm. see, the roads to the county seats developed rather quickly once it was settled where mm-hmm. county seat. Eagleville is literally about the middle way between two county seats. And were it not for the road from Nashville, the capital, mm-hmm. down to the county seat in Bedford County, Shelbyville, Eagleville might have been pretty well isolated.
Well, it's not going to stay that way long, I guarantee. No. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Greg Tucker.
The Bunganut Pig is back and better than ever in the borough.
I'm with Mark Goodson, the new owner of the Bunganut Pig here in Murfreesboro. Mark, tell us a little bit about the Bunganut Pig.
The store's been open for 17 years. If you haven't eaten with us, we hand cut and hand trim all of our ribeye, and we guarantee the best burger in town.
They should expect a smoke-free environment, open to all ages, and great food, great drink.
Now at the Bunganut Pig, every Monday and Tuesday night is trivia night. Bunganut Pig is on Northfield Boulevard into Georgetown Square.
Project Help!
Those are the children of Project Help. Saddle Up for Project Help will be held Thursday, July 26 at 6:30 p.m. Proceeds benefit Project Help, Rutherford County's only center-based early intervention preschool program. To sponsor Saddle Up, buy tickets or learn more about Project Help, call 898-2458 or visit mtsu.edu/Project Help.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
The 35th annual Bill Carey Golf Tournament to benefit the American Diabetes Association and the MTAR Scholarship Fund is being held again on June 6th at Indian Hills Golf Club. Players can win new clubs by Callaway, a cruise, or even $10,000. Golfers enjoy a great lunch and after party and will receive personalized souvenirs. The 35th Bill Carey Golf Tournament is presented by First Community Mortgage. Teams can register by calling 877-893-2242.
Some of you might have heard of the Doughboy Challenge for Charity. Well, it's back. I'm Katie and I work for General Mills here in Murfreesboro, and I'm excited for this year's 7th annual Doughboy Challenge, a 5K run to raise money for three local charities. This year, we are partnering with Nash Vegas Rollers, the Exchange Club, and CASA of Rutherford County. Last year, we raised over $35,000, and this year, our goal is over $50,000. On June 9th, be a part of our 5K on the Square. Bring the kids and be a part of our local Murfreesboro community. If you have questions or want to register, check out DoughboyChallenge.com.
WeatherEye.
Sunny to partly cloudy this afternoon, high in the low 80s. Tonight, mainly clear, low near 58. Sunny on Wednesday, high near 81. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 79 degrees.
Today is Tuesday, the 5th of June. Our WGNS birthday cake winner is Darius Frazier. Today, Darius is going to receive a free birthday cake, compliments of locally owned and operated Junior's Foodland on East Main Street.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back to the Greg Tucker Show, and we want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything from the simple oil change to major auto repair. Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's onto Ridgely Road. You know, the transportation issue really stands in my mind because without it, a lot of these places couldn't survive. And we were talking about the roads. And, of course, it's nothing like roads today. I mean, you're talking about mud roads and rock roads and things like that. But the thing that really sticks in my mind is how were we able to get all of our goods transported from one place to another? And there had to be some type of businesses that would actually transport all of those goods from, say, into the county area in the downtown area. And I have never heard, and you and I were talking about this off the air, of any large travel businesses in this community at that time.
Well, predecessors to what we now have, our trucking companies and such, and I think we have talked about a much smaller scale. Remember a fellow named Uncle Dave Macon?
Yes.
He had the freighting business between Woodbury and Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. Burr James, a prominent name around the area, had a freighting operation based close to about the corner of Church and what's now the corner of Church and Broad, owned mm-hmm. a lot of property over in that area. And it was your job, in most cases, to get your produce or your output to these central points, which were usually the county seats. And then there were businesses like a very small one-wagon type operation out of Buchanan County, mm-hmm. probably more out of he went all the way to Woodbury, I've heard story. And then the larger operations, which would be, you know, Murfreesboro to Nashville and such. And those evolved. The Hoover lines, which was a big trucking line.
E. Hoover.
Yeah, started with, you know, a wagon and a fella mm-hmm. hauling for his neighbors or hauling from, one central point to a distribution point, such as that. Let me put in a plug here. We're talking about driving around. If any of your listeners making a Sunday drive would like to see something impressive, I'd suggest they go out Bragg Highway and turn south on Coleman Road and watch on the left for what's called the Manor at Twin Oaks, a beautiful restored mansion. The Boyd family spent, I think, about 25 years restoring it. But the history of it is particularly intriguing for that area, which was not what we would call a prosperous farming community. No. Very, very rocky and rough in there. It's quite a surprise to come upon a home like this. Well, that is the old...
It is a shock.
It is. That's the old Elrod home that was on East Main. The two relatively new houses there now, the Huddleston and the Parsons house, occupy the one lot that was this Elrod home. The home was about to be demolished, apparently, and Mr. Boyd negotiated and got the right to the house and to move the house. And they cut off the top floor and set it off with a crane, cut the lower floor in half, loaded it up, and took it all the way out in the country to Coleman Road and put it back together. It's now a bed and breakfast, beautifully done, beautiful grounds. The inside is beautifully done with about six or eight different rooms for the guests. And I had the occasion to be there Friday night. It was the annual garden party fundraiser for the Discovery Center. And I had not, even though that's just over the hill for me, it's a good drive over the hill because you're on those old winding roads. Going through is another one we could argue about the pronunciation. Floration.
Floriton. It's called Floration and Floriton.
Yeah.
You take your pick.
Yeah, well, I have to drive from Donald's Chapel through the Floration metropolis to get over to Coleman Road. But when I first came up on that house just a couple of weeks ago when they were getting it prepared, it takes your breath away.
It blows really your mind when you're driving back here, and then all of a sudden you have this palace sitting over there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Another one that people might enjoy is out Canesville Pike, just before you get to the county line, literally the last property before you leave the county, is another beautiful old home, and you almost have to turn in the drive to see it because there's a beautiful grove of maples, primarily maples, in front of the house, and it's called Maplewood. And I'm told by the current owners that that property has been in the same family since it was taken from the Indians.
Wow.
And that's the family story. The current family name, or the last one resident there, was Pinuel. And the story I got from Patty Pinuel, who's now Ms. Garman, married to Dr. Richard Garman, was that her parents died very close together, and they had a funeral for the two of them. And following the funeral, the family and the mourners, the friends, all went back to that farm, and they had a party. And the Garmans decided that, in memory of the parents, that they'd make it an annual affair. So in that was weekend before last, we went out to the Patty Palooza party, and they lease out most of the property for a riding academy, I would call it. A lot of boarded horses, beautiful horses, riding trails and such. But Rick's Barbecue catered that. We had a choice of goat or any kind of pork barbecue you might want. And they had about eight different bands playing in sequence during the day. A nice party that's more or less open to anybody who's a friend or wants to be a friend.
You go to a lot of neat places, don't you?
Well, it's fun discovering the county.
Yeah.
It really is.
You get all those great invitations, and I never get anything.
I'll call you sometime.
But I'll tell you one that I'll bet you I get to go to.
What's that?
The Blackman Barbecue.
Oh, the Blackman Barbecue is coming up. Now, there's a tradition.
It is a tradition.
There's a tradition that, it predates the World War II, but it really got established in about 1948 when they built the community center there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have since, about 5 years ago, they moved the barbecue from the community center to the Blackman School.
And it's good and not so good.
Well,
I still miss being out there.
Yeah,
in the country.
Well, they're going to try. They're going to move to the Ag Center this year.
Mm-hmm.
And
they are?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's going to be over at the Ag Center. And but still, a visit to the community center and a walk around there. That's one of our communities that has really preserved a good history, and it's largely because of the community center, I think. The pictures and the feel there, you get to know Blackman and the Blackman families. Another one I always look forward to, of course, on the 4th of July, there's a lot of things going on, but the Rockvale 4th of July picnic.
There's that another
one,
tradition.
That one goes back to about 1927, 28, when the school was first built there. And
I think it's the only country school setting that still there. I remember all the county schools used to have a celebration on the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah, 4th of July.
You'd have ball games and all kinds of events.
Yeah, that was perhaps the social highlight of the season.
It was.
In fact, I asked one of my good friends, Evie Miller, if the first date he took his wife on wasn't over at the Rockvale. He claimed not to be able to remember. But he also claimed that they won the cakewalk. Won the cake at least once.
I bet he was there. A debonair type fella, wasn't he?
Well, he wasn't even from that community, but apparently his girlfriend's time was.
You know, we all those things are so neat. And I've had 15 people ask me, when is the Blackman Barbecue going to be? Because they know it's coming up when it gets hot and those type things. But
I think you and I will be together one more time before, but last weekend in June.
Last weekend in June.
Yeah.
It's going to be on a Friday or a Saturday. Isn't it usually
Saturday.
On a Friday?
I'm not sure. We'll clear that up. John L. Beatty will let us know.
You know, it seems like ever since they've had that Blackman Barbecue, I have run into John L. Beatty either cooking something or selling something or all those other things. And it was meant to support the area. Actually, it supports the whole community now. I mean, all of Rutherford County.
The community center and the group of course, it was the Home Demonstration Club, the farm ladies that started the community center. And the barbecue was to raise funds to maintain the community center and to keep the community center programs going. But that group, the community center group, the club, the Blackman Club, I think it's technically called, was responsible for so many improvements, bridges, roadways, school improvements. You know, they really had an organization that could speak with one voice for that community.
What is Zach doing?
Huh?
What is Zach Troutman doing? What do you want, Zach?
Oh, does he want us to wind it
up? I guess he
does.
Well,
I was just getting wound up.
He's not saying anything.
I wanted to talk about the Venus transit across the sun that's happening today.
Oh, what? Well, tell us about that before we get off.
Oh, over at the Discovery Center, starting about 5 o'clock, you're supposed to be there set up so you can actually witness the Venus transit. And it won't happen again for 300 or 400 years. But this is significant because last time it happened, the scientists used it to estimate the size of our solar system.
Wow.
And it's just a black dot that grows across the sun, but very few generations have ever had a chance to see it. So I'm going to go over there this afternoon.
What time?
They're open from 5 to, I think, 6:30 or 7. And I'm not even sure how they're going to do it.
And you can actually see it at that time during that period of time.
Yeah, well, if the clouds will let us.
5 to 6:30.
Yeah. And, of course, you can't go out and just stare at the sun.
No, don't look at the sun.
Yeah. So the Discovery Center is setting up something where, you know, we'll be able to, I hope, be able to witness it.
And you're going to see a black dot about the size of what, a pea or something?
Relative to the sun. And big enough that you can see distinctly a black dot. But by taking positions all over the Earth and doing what they call triangulation, they were able to determine how far away the sun was several hundred years ago. And from that, estimate the size of the universe, the orbits and such as that. Now, I don't understand all the math involved in that, but I thought it was neat to think that it's not going to happen again for several more generations.
People who are able to calculate those things are not normal, are they? I hope. Because I'm way below normal. All right, folks. You guys go over there between 5 and 6:30. Where did you say it was going to be at?
Again, at the Discovery Center.
At the Discovery Center. And there's plenty of parking. If not there, I'm sure they'll find parking for you. And just go over there and have a big time and see a part of history. And we'll see you guys tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll have Chris Massaro on, our great athletic director at MTSU. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.